Folks, welcome to the final panel of the this Sabre Analytics Conference. My name is Mike Farron from MLB Network Radio and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Pleased to be here to talk about the StatCast Nerdcast that was part of ESPN's postseason coverage. The empty seat here is supposed to be Jason Benetti, who could not make it because he's calling a collegiate basketball contest today. So make sure that you poke fun at him on Twitter for that. To Jason's right is former Major League player, former first round out of Florida State, former Major League coach, and the analyst for that Nerdcast, Eduardo Perez, the co-host of the Leadoff Spot on MLB Network Radio. And on the end, the analyst who was a key part of that StatCast broadcast. You saw him on a panel yesterday. You read him all the time from MLB.com, Mike Petriello. So, guys, welcome. We're going to talk a lot about how this broadcast came about, where it may head next, what the future of broadcast is with the data and statistical revolution and now technological revolution. But first, this is a little bit of what the broadcast looked like. If you didn't get to see it, I'm guessing most of you did, but if you didn't get a chance to see the wildcard broadcast, the StatCast broadcast, here's how it looked. We won't play all 3.5 hours of that game.
Five extra.
Yeah. It only felt like 3.5 because you guys were so good. We'll have it in just a minute. Folks, if you have questions too throughout the panel, Jeff has the note cards at the back. Go ahead and write them down. We'll bring them up. We'll answer plenty of questions at the end as well. So we're going to have a bunch of those from you, I'm sure. And so go ahead and start getting them in as quickly as possible, because the more we get from you, the less you have to hear me ask questions, which is probably a good thing. So, all right, so you get a little bit of a taste in between the cutouts there of what the broadcast was like. If you missed it, I'm not sure how many of you were able to hear the broadcast as well, but there was a lot of some of the talk that Mike had in there. But Eduardo, I want to start with you in this, because you've been at ESPN. Where you mentioned Phil bringing the idea to you. How did it start? How much discussion was there behind the scenes before this actually happened?
I think it was something that he was looking forward to. He's a fan of the numbers, and he's always trying to challenge and try to make the game interesting for all, but at the same time not overwhelm the audience with so much information, and trying to find the acceptance to all of this. And again, you see, like the old timers, and we've talked about this in the past, they're very reluctant to where the game is going. And I was fortunate in 2013, as a lot of you have heard, with the Houston Astros, they opened my mind big time. And then, you know, working at the time with Mark Simon at ESPN, now at Info Solutions, he also was giving me a lot of information, and then all of a sudden run into Mike, and we continue to just have a lot of dialogue and talk about, still be able to tell the story of the game, but also tell the story within the game and not overwhelm that audience that we lose track of the end result. And Phil did a great job of selling it. I think he picked the right individual in Jason Benetti to be able to broadcast the game and also give that like what I would call life. I stayed in my lane when it came to being able to analyze the game, and Mike at the same time would be able then to tell a story. And we're not afraid to challenge each other, and because I caught myself a lot sometimes, and I catch myself a lot, talking to the TV when I'm at home watching and talking to the broadcaster, saying, okay, really? And so I wanted to be that guy also to Mike. But if it's this way, can you please elaborate a little bit more? How will that work? How will that not work? Because a lot of people say there's a human element to it. There is. But at the same time, the higher percentage is shown. And the most compelling graphic of all during the game, the one that really just caught my attention when we were getting ready for this game, was the outfield positioning and where their strengths were, if it was to the left or to the right, and why they were positioned that way. And it just tells you that where this game is going. That's why I've always said we're at the beginning of really even more exciting stuff. Just, this was the maiden voyage. And that first trip was unbelievable, and I can't wait to get back on that boat and get back in there.
Mike, you came, I knew you and Eduardo both worked on the Home Run Derby for ESPN. That was kind of your first foray with them. I know you've done some studio games before for MLB Network. So when they came to you with this idea, how did you get incorporated into it?
Yeah, I mean, as Eduardo said, through Phil Orleans, who's the senior whatever of baseball at ESPN. So we've been working with them closely for the last couple of years, using StatCast data, feeding it to them. And when they came to me at first, as you said, it was the Home Run Derby. And I'm almost surprised that went well, because the first time I'd ever met Jason or Eduardo was like that morning,
yeah,
I think.
It was.
You probably had no idea who I was, and like that's fine. And that was fun. Like,
follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, well, thank you. The Home Run Derby was fun, but it's like baseball-flavored entertainment. Like, I've made this joke before. It's like trying to broadcast a tornado. I found that like really difficult. And then they came back to us in mid-September, and said, "Do you guys want to do the wild card game?" I was like, "Yeah." And as I remember, we had like one pre-prep phone call like 2 weeks beforehand, and then spent the next 2 weeks preparing for like five different teams because there were the two planes.
That's right.
We flew into Chicago, and I didn't know if we were going to stay in Chicago or drive to Milwaukee overnight. And I think you were doing the game that day.
The game, that tiebreaker game with Carl Ravitch and Tim Kirk.
Yeah, so we're sitting in the hotel room watching, like trying to prepare for
my hotel room. Everyone was in there.
So, yeah, I mean, this is really all how it came together. This is a bit of how the sausage was made. And obviously there's a lot of reasons I think this went well. But, I mean, it's just super fortunate. Like, two guys I didn't really know that well in Jason and Eddie. And it turns out we got along, like, really well. Like, I've done some of these in the past. And it's more like, professional courtesy. You're sort of nice to the guys you work with. But I actually really enjoyed working with you guys. And I think
now I bother
him
all the time. I text him all the time.
Well, but I think you hit on something, too, that was a key component of it. And now that you know Eduardo, I mean, the first time I met Eduardo, I felt like I was part of his family for 10 years. I mean, that's the way he treats everyone. But Eddie, I don't know that you want to be a part of his family. But no, but Jason is that kind of person, too, right? So I like that you said about the Derby, baseball-flavored entertainment, because, Eduardo, I think that's one of the real keys that happened in that broadcast. And I think that that's what part of what Jason Benetti brought to it, too, is that the entertainment aspect was never lost in it. And how important is that if you're going to get into something that, listen, this room is probably the target audience or largely the target audience for a broadcast like that. But if you're trying to appeal to somebody outside it, having someone who can connect to the entertainment aspect of it, how important was that?
It's unbelievable. It really is. Again, I give all the credit to Phil Orleans, because he was able to marry us three in the Home Run Derby, and then again because of the positive results from it. And that was, I thought, very raw, to all of a sudden doing this in game and doing it against us. We're going up pretty much with the Sunday night crew. They're right there sitting next to us, the lead crew, and there's just glass in between us, and all of a sudden our phones are starting to just to go off when it comes to Twitter and everything, and the positive feedback, and not only from people that love the numbers aspect of the game, but just the average fan saying, "Wow, this is really cool. I've never seen the game this way." And I related a lot to when we used to watch TV on SD, and then all of a sudden I went to HD, and we're like, "Whoa, look at that!" And then all of a sudden it wasn't overwhelming, all the graphics that were being put on there, and it was very understandable. And I get a lot of kids that even ask me, and when you get teenagers to ask you, and when are you guys doing some more of those games and everything? What did you like most of it? And that's the part that I really. That I really love, the lead at first base, the outfield, the positioning, the quantity, the pitches, the location, Freeland, pitching in, pitching out, how effective it is. Again, there's more surprises in the future, but this one I really thought, and let's face it, the game was a really good game too.
Right.
So I think all those components put together, I mean, we were running out of graphics, weren't we, at one point?
I did not prepare for 5 hours worth of baseball, I can tell you that.
But then the game has to take over. But you hit on something that's, that I think from analyst standpoint, they love the minutiae of the game, right? Defensive positioning, defense, base running, pitch selection, sequencing, all of those things are important now. They always say, "Hey, listen, you can't just take the macro view. You have to look at the micro, too." Mike, having somebody like Eduardo in there, what kind of credibility do you think that brought? Because it would be one thing if you and I went and did a broadcast like that. But to have somebody who has that kind of cachet and buy-in, what was that like?
I mean, huge. I mean, not only, obviously, did you play, but you've been a coach. You know, you grew up in a baseball family, all that. And what I really liked, I kind of feel bad complimenting you so much. You're sitting here right next to me. But there was this one moment that stood out to me. Hi. Was we sort of disagreed. Maybe not disagreed, but came at it from a different angle where some lefty pull hitter was up, and we showed the shift graphic where he's, like, you know, super heat map to the right side. And I'm like, oh, you know, this is why the first baseman tugging the line. And you're like, yeah, that's true, but also, like, the game situation, you know, whatever the outs were, that's, like, where he would be positioned. And I thought that was cool. It's not like, you know, we were going against each other, but kind of came at it. Similar conclusions from a different point of view, which is great, obviously, because, you know, you and I couldn't have more different backgrounds. And I've worked with a lot of former players, and some of them are, like, outright negative against it, and some of them are a little uncertain. And, you know, and I know you're not as big of a quote-unquote nerd as I am, but you were open to everything and, like, just inquisitive about it all. And I thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah, it comes down to when I watch games, and my wife doesn't like to watch baseball games with me because I am talking to the screen all the time. And I feel that the only way I do the same thing that I do in the booth, I'll do at home, and the same thing I do at home, I do in the booth. And again, it's who I am. I can't be quiet about it because I always feel that the audience at home is asking the same questions. And I think that's what really really at least gives me it's unedited or what it may be, just raw as it is, but for me, that's who I am. And again, I think the day before helped out so much. The home run derby helped out a lot, where we got to know each other. And the more repetitions you get with a person, it doesn't have to be in the booth, but just the trust of knowing, listen, I'm not trying to discredit you at all. I'm just trying to see, because I think that's what the audience at home probably is wondering too. What about the game situation? What about that hitter? Mm-hmm. What about the hitter's strength in that situation?
I'm curious from the reaction from baseball people to the broadcast, Eduardo, especially those who may have been more skeptical, maybe players who are a little bit removed from the game, who haven't seen not just the data but the technological revolution take over. What was their reaction like to it, either positive or negative? What did you hear from that?
That's the beauty of it. I think there was such a really good balance for that game that it was mostly positive, and I think it opened eyes to a lot of players that the ex-players that weren't really in tune with it, and they consider themselves quote-unquote purists. And what I always try to tell the players is, listen, man, you know, if you look at the front offices back in the day, if you look at the scouts in the past, they were former players. This was a good old boys club. Well, guess what? The good old boys club has now opened its doors because the aspect of now there's so many front offices, so many people in the coaching positions that never played pro ball, but they have a voice. And it's because we're open to it, and I think the numbers have allowed us to make ourselves to make this game relevant to all. And I think because of that different points of views that we're all getting from different angles, it's only making the game better. It's making it more competitive in between the lines, and it's making it a lot more competitive outside the lines. And I think that's the biggest challenge. And a lot of purist, good old baseball people always try to keep it within, but you're realizing that you can't. And it's, as I said it 2 days ago, this is just the cusp of what's ahead.
Obviously, the good feeling after the event, you're riding a high, you got all the responses. I probably only text you 40 times to say how much I was enjoying it, you know.
The hardest part that night was looking for a restaurant to eat.
In Chicago, even, right? Like the town that Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
Somehow our producer took us like half an hour away from the ballpark, but that's a different story.
Yeah, I'm sure you ended up at the lodge. But as you went back and looked at it, what were the things, Mike, that you said, man, we missed that, or if we had a chance to do it again, I'd like to do this? Where were those moments you were like, I think this would be cool and appeal to a wide audience?
I don't know. Is it a cop out to say like I was really happy with it the way it
yes,
was? Like
it entirely is, because I know you didn't. Just, I know there were little moments, even if it were just like the little lights weren't twinkling.
You know, for me, it's always like stop speaking so fast. Like that is always the thing I'm always gonna have a problem with. No, I think
I second that.
Yeah. So
I like, slow down.
Yeah, man. I listen. I own it for sure. No,
he told us before the game, hey, could you tell us about
I can tell you, like, about, you know, we do our little intros, and then Jason kind of, like, leaned over like I was a puppy dog, and he's like, slow down. Okay. So, yes, there's that. No, for the most part, I think it was you know, really well received. I think that the toughest part in kind of approaching it is, you know, it's a playoff game, right? This isn't like a Tuesday night Orioles-Marlins game where you can kind of screw around and go nuts. Like, you have to respect the fact that this is a one-game playoff that really, really matters. But at the same time, like Eduardo said, there is another traditional booth, like, literally right next to us, you know? So you've got to make it separate from that without alienating everybody. And I am hopeful that's what we did. And I think if we were to do it over again, we might try to, I don't know, make it even more accessible to the casual fan. Because I think a lot of it was just, like, it was visually appealing. You've got the graphics, mm-hmm. a lot of which I didn't have to give, like, a ton of explanation for, which I think was a huge part of it. As you know from TV, there's only so much time you have. So that's what I'd like to push further, like, the next time we get to do this.
Guys, a lot of the work, and he's not even here and because he's on paternity leave, but Andy Jacobson, our producer, nailed it. I mean, he was brilliant during this whole process. He knew if it was going to be too much. He tried to simplify the whole thing. And then during the game, as I said, you know, you're receiving all these Twitter. Usually the Twitter, the people that tweet, it's pretty nasty. You guys know what I'm talking about. And all of a sudden, it's all positive, and you're like, something's going on here. Is this working? And it continued to be positive throughout. And it's, again, it's not just people that are into the numbers. I think it was very educational for the average fan.
As we've watched the tech change, Eduardo, it's become much more, it seems like that what we started on with pen and paper and numbers has become much more visual. Does the fact, is it just as much as that? Because I'm sure a lot of people are like, hey, why didn't we get to this sooner? Is it just that now the technology is kind of matched up with what you can do on television?
I believe so. And you know, we have a great asset where Mike comes in with great ideas with what StatCast is bringing in on a daily, you know, if it's on a daily or a weekly basis. And you know, the first game that we'll do next, you know, this coming season, most likely technology will change by the last game that we do in the wild card. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun just to watch this thing grow and to see how we can make each one better. And every one is going to be a test subject from one game to another. And sometimes we'll miss. And sometimes we'll hit it right on the money. And hopefully we can bounce back from each game to see how we can continue to perfect this. But to say that there's a perfect broadcast, maybe the average fan will say, yeah, it was great. Maybe Mike will say, well, I spoke so fast. Maybe I'll say that I spoke over him. But at the end of the day, everyone from producers to directors to our bosses, they were all ecstatic about the game.
So you are doing it again this year. There will be
an indeterminate amount of games this year.
That's
great. We can't, like, break out the whole schedule yet. But, yes,
yeah.
So
I was told to keep it. I better just stay shut and let him talk. I sort of spoke a little bit too much the other day.
So, Mike, you mentioned that this is obviously a big game. It's the wild card game. It's not a Tuesday night Marlins-Orioles game. But how do you treat, if you do end up doing a Tuesday night Marlins-Orioles game with it? Well, no, obviously, but how do you continue to treat that? How much different does it end up being than what you guys did in the wild card game?
I mean, we would probably tone up the numbers a little bit. Like, I don't exactly remember what we ended up showing on the graphics because we talked about it a lot. Like, I think we probably at least still showed, like, the traditional triple slash at some point. You know, some of the things we were like, we're never going to show pitcher saves, you know, or RBIs because people don't care about that. But I think we really did think about it in terms of, like, let's make this a really watchable entertainment experience. So, you know, while still trying to separate ourselves from the main traditional broadcast. So if we were doing something that was, like, really explicitly for the nerds, I probably would have used, like, you know, expected weighted on base, which mm-hmm. we never used, really get, like, deep into some of these. And then I just don't know that that's as entertaining because then you start getting, the, like, explaining and educating. And I was trying not to go too deep into all of this because it's still a playoff game. Jason still has to call the balls and strikes. I mean, I think, you know, we were on the air for 5 hours, and I'm pretty sure I said launch angle, like, twice, which I guess is proof that, you know, it's not the boogeyman. You can still actually call a game and use nerd stuff and not talk about launch angle.
That was the hardest part for me, not having, you know, trying not to say the word batting average. Mm-hmm. That
you
was
still
a challenge.
Say it. It's okay.
It's okay you say it, but it's, you know, he's hitting 320. And all of a sudden, he'll look to my left, and he's like, Really, what are you doing? And I'm like, okay. So I just made sure I wouldn't stay traditional with it. And, you know, and again, this was our second screen. So there's an alternate viewing. If you wanted to watch an E1, the game, it's called the normal way, the good old-fashioned way with opinions and everything. But this took pretty much the opinions out of it. It gave you the reality, the cold, hard truth of who Charlie Blackmon was in center field, of, you know, who Nolan Arenado is at third base, stuff like that. I think that plays, and that's why those guys are, you know, either underachieving or overachieving at their positions.
I can tell you the feedback I received, you know, most of it positive, kind of broke down around three different ideas. And I'd be interested to know if you heard the same thing, right? Number one, people liked the new stuff, you know, the new graphics.
Yeah.
You'd never seen that on TV before. It makes sense. It was the StatCast broadcast. There was StatCast stuff. Number two, a lot of people was like, even if you didn't do that, just like not coming at me with the old cliches that don't actually make any sense, just like leaving that stuff out would have been cool, which I thought was interesting. And then a lot of people, the third thing, they just like, you know, kind of going back to how much we enjoyed being there and enjoyed doing the game. I mean, it was a wild card game at Wrigley. That's super cool. And they said that really came through. You know, I don't know, that's been an issue a lot. Yeah. Is like, are people enjoying being at the game and calling the game? I mean, I was, certainly. We all three of us enjoyed hanging out together.
Are you kidding? This is a great gig. Yeah. I'm sorry. I enjoy every week.
It's like, if you're not having fun, what are you doing there? And for me, that's what the feedback came in, and I thought that was cool.
I'm curious because, Eduardo, you do so many of the first screen broadcasts, either, you know, the primary broadcast for ESPN TV or for radio. What can you take that you learned from doing in the StatCast broadcast that you may incorporate into your regular preparation on a standard broadcast?
I try not to use batting average anymore. I really do.
It's still there. You can still use it.
I still use it. Don't get me wrong. He's hitting so-and-so okay. But I like using... And again, I break down a lot of the offensive stuff. I'm teamed up a lot with Tim Kirchen, which is the ultimate historian of the game. And so much respect to him and Carl Ravitch, which has been doing baseball for the last, you could say, 30 years with Baseball Tonight and then now into the broadcast booth. And my job is to be able to tell the viewer what is either just happened and why it happened or what's going to happen in certain situations. And with all this information that now we get to do games, now I can ask different questions from my research department before a game starts to find out if it's exit velocity on pitches inside or away on a certain hitter. I want to know what's how they are with the UZR, with their defensive positioning and the whole thing, if it works, if it doesn't. I'm talking a different lingo, and I think it's going to continue to evolve, and I think it continues to evolve with every broadcaster, depending on how open they are to figuring what their style is. But I believe this broadcast is actually going to make me better this coming season. It was the wild card game. It was the last game that I got to call. So I'm curious to see where it's going to go once opening day comes in for me, which will be the Yankees and Orioles. And actually, I'll be in Japan next week, so maybe the Japan games. And we're already getting emails from that, and we're trying to evolve as Dave Fleming and myself, trying to figure out what we can do just in that telecast in the limited opportunity we have for those two games in Japan.
I just want to make it clear, I'm not going to be mad at you if you use batting average. You know, you can still say it. It's still like a baseball broadcast.
Yeah, just quote their walk rate,
too. That's right. You can be a 240 hitter and be a lousy hitter, or you can be a 240 hitter and be a good hitter.
You know what I did right after that game? I went to look to see what my career WAR was. By the way, don't look it up. I'll tell you, it was a .1. 13 years in the big leagues, and all I got was a .1. Never mind.
Yeah,
all right,
that's because the defense metrics were really
suspect
over the course of your career.
Because he's in the negatives.
Although he does claim that he's the Mets' all-time ERA leader, minimum 5 innings, but that's. But I think you hit on something too in this, and like, okay, so how do we, on a more traditional broadcast? And listen, like, I do games. I don't use batting average as much. I mean, I'm more interested in things that are more predictive, right? So like walk rate, strikeout rate, isolated power. Fielding independent numbers, I may not bring up what somebody's FIP is, but I'm talking about their ground ball rate, their strikeout rate, their walk rate. How do we encourage other broadcasts to do this? Because at this point, it shouldn't be unique. Like, there are guys that you've worked with, like John Shambi.
I was about to go with John Shambi, and at one time I thought he was speaking another language when he was bringing all this stuff up. And I think it was a learning lesson when I would do games with him, and he would challenge me on certain situations where he already knew the advanced numbers that was going on in certain players. And he would ask me, knowing that I wasn't aware of those numbers, just to see the old school version. And then after we were done, I was like, dude, he just schooled me. but that's when I started doing my little research. I started, okay, I'm doing a game with Boog. I got to get ready. I have to be ready. And, you know, he does a lot of games with Rick Sutcliffe, and, you know, he won't challenge him on that aspect. It's more, but with me, knowing that I'm a younger generation, knowing that I was with the Astros and I love to learn and just love to evolve, I love that challenge. Where Carl Ravitch, he'll stay more traditional. Not that he's not accepting of it, but it's who they are. Remember, I'm dealing pretty much with an older group between Tim Kurchin and Carl Ravitch, so I have to also know the balance and then sometimes explain what those situations are in a traditional form, still using some of the advanced analytics.
Do you think the numbers attract a younger audience just by, I mean, listen, WAR is like, if there are kids I see in the room, wins above replacement has been around longer than they've been alive, right? It's a ubiquitous statistic for a younger generation, whereas opposed to somebody who's in their 40s or 50s may have had to educate themselves because it challenged the notions of what they knew in baseball values.
Sort of. I think, obviously, nobody wants to throw out like the entirety of baseball history and the numbers we've used to this point, but I do think a lot of people see, you know, a broadcaster saying, oh, that guy's, you know, 15-9, he's really good, and you sort of roll your eyes. It's like, that's not really the way the game's played anymore. I don't know that I would say WAR attracts people so much, but like for our game, I think the visuals were a big part of it. I mean, a lot of people grown up playing video games, and it sort of looked like a video game a little bit, so I think that was a big deal. And I also think it's not so much about the numbers specifically as the concepts. Like, baseball's really weird right now, if you think about it. I mean, not even just since you retired, but in like the last 3 or 4 years, right? Yeah. Like 4 years ago, the opener, you know, spin rates, like the way the shift is now, we didn't look at baseball that way. And if you want to explain to people why teams are doing the weird things that they're doing, you know, you have to be able to explain it. Like, I guarantee this year, hopefully on one of our games, we're going to have some no-name reliever who has like a 6 career ERA, and he's going to come up throwing ridiculous sliders and dominating people because he spent all winter in front of a Rapsodo or an Intertronic or whatever. Most people don't know what that is. Like, it's going to be on us to explain, like, hey, here's how this guy improved. Nobody cares about the actual spin rate number on a TV, but you could say, oh, well, his slider has like 8 more inches of bite, and this is why he's great, and this is how he did it. Like, I think that's the most important part, is just getting that information out.
I'm going to add to that, because I was just in Tallahassee. I had to do a special with Mike Martin, by the way. Congratulations, 2,000 victories. College, all-time college coach. That was my coach, so I'm all in on that. I was there, and they were scrimmaging right before their season opener. And all their pitchers, when they're doing the scrimmage, on the scoreboard is all the data up to date after every pitch of what the TrackMan was putting up. So they knew spin rate. They take the pitch, and they can look back, and they can already, young college players already knew exactly how to read all this material. Some of them are going to make the big leagues. Some of them are going to, a few are going to make the big leagues. A few are going to sign professionally. Some of those college players are going to end up probably in a front office working if it's with the numbers. Because, and this is not, I'm using Florida State as an example because I was there, but this is going on in every university, in a lot of the major universities. Players are more educated now. They're willing, and they're understanding the numbers. They're understanding where the game is going. And as I said the other day, ground ball to shortstop, Jake Cave hit 2 ground balls to shortstop, Twins against Red Sox. Shortstop's playing on the other side of the infield, base hit. Before, you used to get one of these from the pitcher, like, really? He's not there? I got a ground ball? Pitcher, ground ball, I didn't do my job, okay, give me the ball. You know, they're there for a reason. I ask the players, the shift doesn't bother them. We continue to evolve. I'm using the shift as an example. The players continue to evolve, and it's speeding up big time.
Can I back that up for a second? Yeah. So this spring, from all the various spring training sites, I started noticing in all the pictures, you know, there'd be high-speed cameras and rep sodas and all this stuff. And so I kept like a long-running Twitter thread of like, here's this team using it, here's this team using it, on and on and on. And I got a lot of replies from high school and college players and coaches, and they were like, yeah, that's great. We were doing this 3 years ago. It's about time the pros caught up.
Well, that's why Wes Johnson, the pitching coach for the Minnesota Twins, went straight from Arkansas to the big leagues. He was an advisor for some of the major league teams. These guys are getting it. They understand it, and they're able to teach it. And I think that's their biggest key.
Well, and I think specifically, just to follow on that, Minnesota, Texas, the Angels have spent a lot of time hiring college coaches this winter in player development because they have. And you know, we're in the middle of our spring training tour for MLB Network Radio, and I know you, because I've been listening to your shows, I know you've been asking the question of players, and I'm asking the same thing about the technology. And the players are more, especially the younger guys, are more comfortable with it, because as I had an area scout say to me, like, if you're in a cage with a kid, you can see him make the adjustment. You can show him what the adjustment is that he needs to make right away with the technology. The players know it. The players know how to improve it. And what they're seeing is, instead of the numbers, which I feel like there was a generation, probably the generation you played, was they were being used to ding the players. Instead, there's a lot more, because of the technology, and specifically these technological aspects, that are allowing players to see that it's ways that they can improve their game, and that's all they want. And Trevor May said it to us on the radio a couple weeks ago. He said, think about this. If we really are playing at a time where we've had more talent, more physical talent in the big leagues than any other time, which is what you figure each generation is going to be, the idea of optimizing everybody's performance is really exciting, because then you're getting all of the players playing at their peak, or more of the players playing at their peak, and that's really exciting. And that also translates well to television broadcasts, because all of these things have really cool images as a part of it. We're screwed on radio, but on TV, you guys have it good.
Yeah, and remember when Trevor Bauer was pretty much the outlier? Forget about all his Twitter stuff. But he was the outlier with the stuff that he did on the field, where people are like, oh, really? What's he do? But he was ahead of the game. And you know, and now the game is sort of catching up to all the stuff that he's been doing, if it's with Driveline. And you see a lot more players going that way. Kevin Slowey, all of a sudden Maximize, got more spin rate, got more velocity also. And he changed his repertoire with what he used to be with Minnesota now to what he is with the Marlins.
Yeah, I think there's a long way that it can go. In terms of continuing to change the standard broadcast to make it more accessible, I'm going to single out Jack Summers, who I see in the audience here, because he had a great line when we were talking the other day about just the idea of using statistics here and there in stats. And it's basically like top-of-mind awareness, right? Like, the more you mention it, the more people get comfortable with the idea, whether it be WOBA or whether it be WAR or whatever it is.
Star Trek character,
whatever it
WOBA?
Is. Right, yes. He was my favorite. I had a poster of WOBA on the wall. Yeah. But whatever the statistic is, using it more and more, how can we sprinkle it into broadcast where it's not obtrusive, but where after a while, all of a sudden, people understand, okay, this is important, so that we're not going back and having the question, or not going back to executives who run television or radio networks and saying, gosh, why are you throwing all this stuff in, when clearly it matters in baseball, it matters to the evaluative process.
We spend a lot of time thinking about that, and we talk to a lot of the broadcast booths, and as you can imagine, 30 broadcast teams, there's a wide variety in terms of how willing, you know, some of the guys seek me out and ask for numbers, and some of the guys I'm never going to approach about any of this. So it does have to be easy to explain, and I think what we really learned about this show was visual. Like, if I don't actually have to explain what it is, and we just put it up on the screen, like, I think the shift chart was a perfect example of that. Right? Five different slices. Here's how often he hits the ball. And generally that lines up with where the fielders are standing. And that explains right away why the fielders are standing in a spot you might not understand. And I think that's what we need to keep getting towards. So we're actually reworking a big part of the graphics package for this year that I think will help with that, because obviously I need to explain some of this stuff, and I want to make it so that other broadcasters can explain some of the stuff too. But it's also like, if they don't really want to get into it, and you can still put it up on the screen and give somebody some information, I think that's the most effective way. And it's really hard to do, but that's what we spend a lot of time on.
I mean, Eduardo, you have to explain it on the radio too. So, like, should we be afraid to explain, or should we if there's a natural spot to be able to explain it, should we be explaining what's going on?
I think we should explain it. I really do. I'm tired of not tired. I don't want to disrespect the audience by thinking that they don't know.
Right.
I think the audience also, the fan is understanding, and we're seeing fan bases understand what organizations are doing to get better and continue to be relevant in a division. I'll use, for example, the Toronto Blue Jays with what's going on with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You know, we do the radio and we get the callers, and the callers are aware of what's going on, and they'd rather have that extra year of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And they understand what the defensive numbers are, and the ones that don't are curious enough that they can go, if it's to FanGraphs or and get that explanation of what it is. And so I don't ever want to assume that the audience does not know. I will tell you this, every game that I do, the only thing I have is I got the score sheet here. I do not keep any, I don't have notes, pre-notes. Mm-hmm. I do not have notes for an open or anything. It all comes, I believe, just from what we do in radio and what the research that I do, and then just speak at that moment from that certain instance. And I have my phone right here. And I get a lot of help actually from a lot of you that are tweeting and explain and say, hey, is it Darren Williams also? And I've never met him.
You missed him by 2 hours.
But he's one of my best friends, and he doesn't even know
birthday.
It. I got a man crush on that guy. He tweets awesome. And I see all the stuff, and again, I read up on what's going on in the game, and I know the fans do too. And if they don't, then ask away. And I'll gear you to that. We're so accessible in today's game, in game, during the game, and it pops up. Mm-hmm. And I think it's our responsibility that if you don't understand something as a regular fan, I know you guys all do because you're here, but if that fan that does not understand something, we're accessible, and I want to be accessible for it.
Did you like sitting next to me with my laptop and my giant stack of notes? Because that's what I had for the
You did. Yeah, you did. And that's cool. And maybe in the third broadcast from then, I'll just throw them out the window and say, go.
Great, we'll wing it.
But I think you raised something that, you know, like I've struggled with. Like, we've been taught to prep as play-by-play guys one way for our entire career. There's a lot of it that we don't need. Like, if you use the scoreboard for basic statistics that you need, then your eyes are on the field. It's not something that you have to write down in your notes. I think the amount of time that you spent, to my point is, like, the amount of time that you spend preparing, it's going to come across much more natural.
Absolutely.
If it's just in your mind because you've prepped it. You might need to write a word. I write a word down that might remind me of a story or something like that.
Right.
But I want to try and keep it as clean as possible. I'll take some stats, walk rate, strikeout rate, like those things, so I can tell the story of whether or not this guy has a good approach, or he's a power hitter, or there might be something unusual that people don't know about them statistically, and take it. But it's the same thing as what you're doing, is not getting caught up in writing all of this down. You've got the information there to be able to do the game.
No, I can't. I don't have the ability to write stuff down during the game or look down for it. I'll tell you, what I use a lot, and I don't know if he's here or not, but I use a lot the Remarkable from Inside Edge. I use that like you wouldn't believe. I think it is a brilliant piece. I count on it a lot. It's right there on my iPad, and I look for it, and I prep. I make sure everything's set up on that aspect, and then the rest, I keep my eyes on the field, and I'm just on the score sheet writing everything down just in case if it's my partner gets lost in a story and something goes missing. But everything else, I need to know where the positioning is. I need to know where the sun is at the time. One time, Starling Marte had his glasses up here, and it was my job to, with a left-handed hitter knowing and a high velocity from a pitcher, that odds are that a fly ball is going to left field. And I need to be able to say that before it happens, because then I'm not doing my job. So all those things, I need to be able to figure all those out. And I think the 2.5 years that I had coaching at the big league level helped me out a lot. And it opened my mind, again, 2013, being in Houston, just seeing things in a different way. It opened the door to opening up to more experiences.
I got a couple questions here. This one I think is important. This is from Russell in the UK. He says, coming from the outside of the US, I was amazed by the commentary team saying a game wasn't as good as it was. It puts new fans off the game. How do you see the line between objectivity and creating a product people want to watch? And that is a major criticism, I think, of most national broadcasts currently in baseball, is that the feeling is that whoever is analyzing, whether it be the play-by-play guy or the analyst, that the game was better than they played than it was now?
You maybe have a different answer to this. It's a privilege, man. If you can't, you know, accept the fact that you are in a national broadcast booth for a big game and think that's the coolest thing in the world, then you're in the wrong spot. And I think you can still look at the game today and say, you know, there are some things I'd like to change. You know, maybe there's too many strikeouts. That would be nice to change. You know, some off-field stuff. It's not perfect, and it's never going to be perfect. But the level of talent of guys who are playing now, I think, is so much better than at any point in the history of the big leagues. And if you're going to, you know, like, the worst thing I think you can do is if someone tunes into a baseball game and they've made, like, an active decision, I'm going to spend my time watching baseball, and then you make them feel like an idiot because you're complaining about how bad baseball is right now, who does that help? You know, and that was, like, the number one thing I wanted to avoid. And I'm hopeful that we did a good job of that because it's the most important thing, I think, in the game right now.
We used to go to Wrigley Field, and one of us had to go to McDonald's and get a lot of burgers. And again, the diet has changed. The consumption has changed on what it is. The guys are stronger. They're faster. Everyone, it seems like in the bullpen, throws 95 miles per hour with an unbelievable, I'll say it, spin rate. And where in today's game, where back then it was like that middle reliever was the failed starter throwing 85, 86 with just a get-me-over slider. Hey, just eat up innings as much as you can. Hold on. Make sure the guys in the bullpen are ready for tomorrow. I can't recall when I played, you know, from the left side, and I'll say it because that's when I played most from the left side, five pitchers that threw 95-plus. Where now, it's in every bullpen. Starters, they're there. I mean, I'm going from camp to camp, and everyone's raving about certain guys. If it's the A's raving about Jesus Luzardo, saying this guy's the next coming, and the velocity and all that. And it's just, it's different. It's a different game, and these guys are training a lot better than they ever were. This game's a lot better, and it's a lot quicker.
And the Adam Ottavino could strike out Babe Ruth, and it would be no problem.
Yeah. I don't think you ever saw a slider like that.
So, but a lot of these guys were your peers, right? So if you were, let's say, a media coach for former players, what advice would you give them about handling the game today, knowing that starters aren't going to throw 250 innings and that there are going to be more relievers? Whatever it is, how would you handle getting them to understand that there may be issues with the game today, but that it doesn't necessarily make it worse than when they played?
Okay, I'm gonna go back to a girls' soccer game that was going on during the off season, and I'm sitting there watching the game, and Miguel Cabrera's daughter's on the other team, and he decides to stand next to me and watch the game. And I'm like, pretty good. This guy is one of the all-time hitters of all time. I'm gonna pick his brain, and he might think that I'm doing some work here. So in the meantime, I'm asking him, I said, how are you doing this? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, you're getting older. You're not 21, you're not 19, you're not, you know, when you came up with the Marlins, and the guys are getting stronger and they're throwing a lot harder. He goes, it's scary. He said, because think about it. I know all these guys are wearing all this armor right now, and they have to. It's every pitcher throws hard, and the thing is this. We used to at least get that third at-bat. We used to see the same pitcher. We don't get to do that. Sometimes it's just one at-bat, and then you get a different look and a different – And I'm older, and so I have to continue to develop, and it's hard. It's a harder adjustment for the veteran players, but the game's getting younger, and it's getting younger because there is a lot of guys that come in, and organizations are realizing that they have to get them at their prime, and sometimes their prime, especially for pitchers, is a lot younger than the position players when it comes to prime.
No, I think it's a good explanation. How can teams use advanced metrics like those shared in the StatCast broadcast to enhance the ballpark experience? Scoreboards are filled generally with core stats almost exclusively.
You know, you'd be surprised at how much time we've actually spent working on that issue. Like, I think, you know, Ben's back there somewhere, and we've spent a lot of time talking about scoreboards because I know I went to a Mets game like last year, and they were definitely showing some like long out-of-date StatCast metric that we had depreciated like 3 years ago. So it's actually kind of a complicated thing, though, because there is almost no explanation or context you can really do on a scoreboard. It's a big flashing number that's maybe going to light up in flames, right? And you can maybe put a rank or something. But it's hard. I think some of the teams are doing a really good job of it, especially the ones with these giant fancy new scoreboards. There's lots of room for stuff. You know, the in-game experience is still very much for all kinds of fans. Like, I don't think you're ever going to, you know, not show batting average on that, nor should you. But I don't really want to, you know, say that this guy's got a great batting average and he's a great player. Like, yeah, show it, but show me his, you know, OPS or WOBA or whatever. And I think you can try to manage multiple experiences with that.
I always remember and relate, and my wife actually wrote a really cool piece about that. I always remember where I was because of a certain baseball event or moment. And I actually want to ask Mike this, because for me it was Tampa, where the first time that I went to a stadium and I saw OPS in the scoreboard, I was like, what is that? And it was a moment. I was like, I do not like not knowing what's not up there. And at the time, I was what's up there? And I was a coach. And you probably remember the first time you also saw OPS on a scoreboard,
no? I can't remember when it was. No? I mean, the one that always stands out to me is in Pittsburgh. On the ribbon board, you know, the LED, after every pitch, they have the pitch FX data.
Yes, they do.
Had the raw pitch FX data with the break and all that. And what always drove me nuts about it is that there's no context to it, right? It's just up there raw. So you've got velocity, and then you've got horizontal and vertical
break.
Movement. And, like, and you're looking at it, and all of a sudden you're trying to go through the calculus in your own head and being like, okay, so he's – negative movement's going to move this way on the x-axis, as opposed to, like, there's no contextual for it. So that's the one that always stands out to me about the ballpark experience in advance. That's a negative one, I guess, but yeah, I don't remember seeing OPS. I've seen some teams go from having advanced numbers to being more simplistic, and I don't like it. As somebody who uses the scoreboard as a broadcaster, I don't like it. What are the most effective ways for viewers or listeners to provide feedback about what works, what they think works in a broadcast?
Twitter, I think, definitely. I mean, yeah, right. Seriously. Maybe very foolishly of me, I was watching Twitter during the game because I wanted to know if, like, people thought it was cool or not. And then only in between inning breaks, I swear, I would reply to people, and they're like, aren't you on the air right now? Why are you tweeting at me? But yeah, I, God help me, I look at everything I get, you know, good or bad, and that's definitely the best way to do it.
He's 100% right. It's the easiest and fastest way of being able to get to it. And believe me, we read it.
And the really nasty ones, the mute button is
good.
Because then they don't get the satisfaction of being blocked. But yeah, you end up muting them. You don't have to.
I wish I would tweet more than what I do. I don't. Not that much, but it's definitely.
It evens out. I tweet too much. So.
Yeah. I noticed.
did the Jabbo broadcast, the one that had Rob Nyer and others on it, and the feedback from that affect the StatCast broadcast, and if so, how?
Yes and no. I wouldn't say specifically that one so much, but there were similar ones at MLB Network that we've done every year, the SaberCast, I guess it's called. And it did inform it, because those, and I think the Jabbo one as well, are all done from a studio. You know, you've got four people behind a desk, and you're watching the game on a screen, and this one was very different. We were at the ballpark. You know, we went down and we talked to the managers and the players before the game. It was treated very much like a regular broadcast, even though we were taking a different approach to it. Whereas I think some of these other ones were well-intentioned, and I've been on the MLB Network ones, and they're super fun. But it's not quite the same. You know, you can't see the field. The play-by-play guy can't get as excited because you're not hearing the crowd. So I did take some of those lessons and say, okay, how can we make this different? But just being there, that's what it's got to be.
And that's a trend that's growing, especially in college baseball, is that you're seeing a lot more studio broadcasts with that, and so you lose some of that feel. Yeah,
a lot of that going on. But I think one thing for any broadcast, my personal opinion, the key to an analyst right now is you have to open your mind to it. You cannot, if the game's going to pass you by, and that's the reality of it.
How do you know the percentage of time to use traditional versus non-traditional statistics?
Well, I guess on our broadcast, it's like, you know, 100% and 0%, right? But I wouldn't say 0%. Like, there are certainly some. We probably
ERA,
you know,
would still.
Yeah, right. ERA. I mean, I don't know. Is raw home run total a traditional number? I guess there certainly is a split. I think, you know, if it's a traditional broadcast, that number is different from what we are doing. Yeah, there's not really a great answer to that.
How about for a first screen? I mean, how would you handle that? I don't know that you've ever thought about, like, what percentage of time I would use a traditional stat versus a non-traditional one, but, like, how would you try and balance that?
I'll be honest with you. Years ago, when I was doing Baseball Tonight, I had it on a nightly basis, Tim Kirchin gave me the best advice. He said, you try not to do a show with using numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, let me or Buster use those numbers. We didn't play the game. You played it. Tell us what you see. And then you're doing your job. And that way it's a lot more fluid. So all the numbers that I used to write down on a book and everything, that's why I kept everything real simple. I just say what I see. I do know numbers. I respect the numbers. But I can't get involved with it. And because I don't know how many people here are bilingual, but when I start throwing numbers out and try to speak English at the same time, I get in trouble. I'm in big time trouble. So I actually let, if it's the broadcaster or the person sitting next to me, if it's a three-man booth and that person is really good with numbers, I let him do the work.
But I think you hit on something, too, in that, like, sometimes, and this is something that I harp on a lot with when I'm evaluating tapes from other broadcasters or try and do on the radio some, is concepts work really well when you're just hearing a voice talking. You start bogging down with numbers. Even if you're just, like, think about this. At the beginning of a game, somebody digs in, and the leadoff man's hitting .273 with three homers, 22 RBIs, 17 stolen bases. Like, you get all that. What did you really take out of that? You probably didn't remember any of it, right?
Well, yes, and the other thing is, again, the audience is a lot smarter. They also have this. They have their computer out. They can see that. They can research that without a problem. I want to tell you the story of why that hitter is hitting .273 with three home runs. Why his, you know, and that's the story I'll say. If it's a swing path, if it's that he's lunging, is the bat head's behind, that's my job. And I know that's my job. And again, his on base percentage is this. Why? This is why. Because he has an idea at the plate what he's doing before he even gets out there.
There's a great example of that you did last year, Marcelo Ozuna, right around 4th of July, I want to say, that you went through, I think you were you doing the games in Arizona? I think you were, right?
Yes.
The Cardinals?
Yes.
And talking about him being off balance at the plate and showing the video on and noticing it. Why is Marcelo Ozuna off to a poor start? Is it the shoulder or is it because there's a mechanical issue? And that's something that you showed, I thought, showed really well.
It was a leg kick. It was the leg kick situation. And that's what I try to do. That's where I do my research. So if there's a game that usually I do Mondays, I'm already working on that Monday game since Thursday. Then Thursday, Friday, parts of Saturday, then Sunday usually travel at night and to get ready for the game. And then after that, I'm good because it's the first game of a series, so it's not like I can do the homework the day before with that player. And then I'll tell the player, hey, by the way, I want you to watch the game and see what you're doing or tape it after.
What would you like to be able to do in terms of bringing pregame information to players to be able to take into a broadcast?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, you know, very much depends on which sort of player you're talking to, because not everybody's going to be that interested in it. But if you've got something where you see something in the numbers, and then you can kind of go to them and say, hey, this is what I saw. Are you doing this on purpose? Like, what's the reasoning behind it? I mean, for me, I'm so bogged down in the numbers that I probably got less out of going to talk to the players than you guys did, because they all know you anyway, so that's like a big help for you. But there are, you know, certain guys are super into it and they're very open to talking about it. But it's still, I think, kind of a somewhat narrow subset of the players who are like excited to kind of open up.
How would you suggest approaching somebody that if you had information that you wanted to be able to communicate with them about, but not necessarily use the numbers to do it?
I think it depends on the player.
Yeah.
I think it really depends on the player and the relationship I have with the player. If I don't know the player, I actually wouldn't go up to the player. I would actually go up to someone that I know, if it's in the coaching staff or a fellow teammate, and let them know, hey, by the way, you're doing this. Or case in point, last year, Sean Doolittle, for example, he was tipping his pitches. I don't know Sean really well. But at the same time, I knew one of his teammates really well. And I told him, I said, hey, what kind of guy is Sean? He goes, dude, great guy. I said, all right, do me a favor, because he's a great guy. Let him know he's tipping his pitch. What? He is? I said, yes. So then all of a sudden, Sean came up to me, and I told him. And I said, you know, I'm only telling you because you're a great guy. If you weren't, I'd be like, see you. So, you know, stuff like that, because he's got great stuff. And his fastball works, and we always wondered, why are hitters missing it? And now we know because of the data that's coming out with it. But I'm telling you right now, I don't care what kind of data you have. If you're telling me a fastball's coming, that guy's going to hit it. So that's where it all comes into play.
I do think that there's an important part of this too, whether you bring the data to the player or not, being present there is important. You know, being in that clubhouse, showing it, especially if you're going to do like a regular season broadcast, because, you know, there are times when the numbers are critical of a player. They need to be able to attach the face with it, and you need to be accountable for what's said, right?
No doubt.
And that's how you end up building relationships too, that where you can come back and do that. And I think that that's one of the things that we continue to watch. And I think that there are some, you know, like Eno Saris has done a great job of that over the years, right? Like building those relationships with players, even if it's just say, hey, how are you? Introduce yourself. I'm the guy on TV and you don't have anything else. That's really important because it helps to build your credibility overall. And,
yeah, couldn't agree more for sure.
You have to be present. I think it's an advantage for you. You do radio, but at the same time, you're doing games, so you're present.
Right.
And there's so many times that a player will come up to me and say, man, why'd you say that about me? And I tell every player, I said, if you make a physical mistake, this is my rule always on everything. If you make a physical mistake, that's okay. We all make mistakes. We all make errors. But if you make a mental mistake at the big league level, there's no level higher than this, I'm going to be all over you because that's my job. And it's your job also not to make mental mistakes. And we see a lot of it because a lot of players get, quote, unquote, rushed to the big leagues. And they're still learning at the big league level. But it's our job to be able to say that and then show up and go into that clubhouse.
Eduardo Perez, Mike Petriello, thank you very much. We look forward to hopefully seeing some more of the Statcast broadcasts this year on ESPN. Thank you.
You got it.